Welcome back to the A-Suite Podcast. We are UCLA Anderson MBA students bringing you the best insights on industry deep dives, the MBA experience in general, and so much more. Now, today we are continuing our popular pop culture case study series with a conversation about one of our favorite TV shows that's near and dear to our hearts, The Office. We decided to take a deeper look into what we can learn about management and marketing from the Michael Scott Paper Company. We had an absolute blast talking with our professor, Franklin Chatty. We hope you enjoy listening too. Now let's dive right into it. All right, everyone, welcome back to the A-Suite Podcast. We hope you are all doing super well. Today we have an awesome, terrific trio. We have myself. I'll briefly introduce. I'm John Lee. I'm a first-year student here at UCLA Anderson, and I have a background in mechanical engineering. And now here's our co-host for the day.
Hey everyone, Katie Schiff here, also a first year at UCLA Anderson. Really excited to be here today. We're talking about one of probably everyone who's listening's all-time favorite shows, The Office. And even better, we have a fantastic guest speaker. John, yeah. You want to introduce who we have today?
Yeah, I'm just completely honored to do this. So we have an honored guest today. And this individual holds a PhD from the University of Chicago Booth School of Business, an MA from Columbia University, and a BBA from the University of Michigan. And honestly, most importantly, he is our marketing professor. So I'd love to introduce all of you to Professor Franklin Chatty.
Thank you for having me. Obviously, the honor is all mine to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Professor, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your time and your expertise. How are you doing today? Let's just start off with that. How's your day going?
Doing great. Fridays, we have all of our seminar speakers. So it's been about as wall to wall on Zoom as my typical Tuesday, which you guys know.
Oh boy.
Also,
which by the way, listeners, is 3 hours of teaching, 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. the entire day.
So it's a little bit of a marathon, but it's a lot of fun because of people like John and Katie.
Much too kind.
Do you do what our econ professor Paolo Giuliano does, which is like espressos all day long in between classes to stay awake?
Oh yeah. So the problem is that I'm trying to bring it at the same level for every section. But this also means that I'm drinking espresso from like 7 to 10 p.m. every Tuesday night. And so I'm usually like up till 3 or 4 in the morning on Tuesday nights because of the
things you do for our education.
Got to make the sacrifice for you guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, we really appreciate it.
Small sacrifice.
One thing that I particularly am very curious about is like what Zoom and Zoom University is like on the other side, right? So we're the students, we go from meeting to meeting. You kind of touched on it, but how has it been like transitioning your marketing experience and your teaching into the virtual room? And you like it? Like, how's it going?
Well, okay, so a couple things. The first is I was worried this summer. I did not think that it was going to go as well as it has been going. Hopefully you guys agree. I basically have not changed anything from the class that I teach in person. So I feel like it's, not much has changed besides literally just the format. So like all my lectures are the same, cases are the same, demonstrations, examples are the same. Interaction seems pretty, still seems pretty fluid online. The only thing that I don't like is not being able to like physically be together where you can pick up on some of these little like mannerisms and, you know, all the nonverbal stuff, you know, that like makes that can make things more engaging, or even just like hanging out before class for a couple of minutes,
That part, like, definitely. I feel for the professors who are trying to get people to talk before class starts and no one wants to unmute themselves to talk versus if we were in the room, everyone would be chatting. So I definitely feel that, and also feel for the same three students who unmute to chat with the professor every time. Like, come on, everybody listening. I challenge you to unmute yourself and say hi before class starts.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, I just need to know that like my microphone is working, my speakers are working. Yeah.
It's like not dead silent up black until hole.
8 a.m. The other thing too is because we're not all in the same place, like I would normally be running into everyone at lunch and in the courtyard and in the hallways. Like, I really do miss a lot of that. But in terms of the Zoom format, I teach basically the same exact class that I normally teach. It's just all that other stuff outside of the actual classroom that I really miss.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Has there been anything in particular that you've really enjoyed about teaching online and that whole dynamic? Trying to think of the positive, the bright side to this.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you guys have been paying any attention, we've been able to get some guest speakers in our class that we might not otherwise be able to pull down. So the I guess the headline example is that Susan Wojcicki, the CEO of YouTube, is going to talk to us later on in the quarter. Every single year that I've been on faculty here at UCLA, I have emailed her out of the blue to ask if she will do a guest lecture. And every single year she's turned me down until this year.
Yes.
Yay.
And it's precisely because of the Zoom format that she doesn't have to actually fly down here. And
I'm really excited for that.
It's definitely opened some doors, as many as it's closed. And so hopefully on the whole, on balance, it's just as compelling an experience.
Yeah. And we've also, just when we took Leadership Foundations and we were able to actually have the main character of the Nickelodeon case come in and speak to us. And all of the second years were extremely jealous that we actually got to meet and talk to that team in real life. So there are definite benefits of Zoom U, we'll be able to come on campus in January and meet in real life, which would be great.
Very much looking forward to it.
And now I feel like it's a good time to kind of switch gears a little bit to get to the meat and potatoes of this episode. And so, Katie, can you introduce us to what we're going to be talking about today?
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about one of the most famous episodes of The Office. We are talking about the Michael Scott Paper Company. This is season 5, episode 23. Episodes like 22 and 24 also touch on it for anyone listening who wants to watch along. But episode 23, the Michael Scott Paper Company, a quick synopsis for you. Michael Scott has left Dunder Mifflin after being unhappy with management to start his own firm, the Michael Scott Paper Company. He brings along Ryan, the temp, who also has an MBA, woot woot, and Pam Beasley, who is the secretary, but she's really excited to be hired as a salesperson at the Michael Scott Paper Company. So up-leveling her earning potential and advancing her career. She's really excited about that. It's the first day in the office. They're getting ready for a big marketing event, their pancake luncheon, where they're trying to sell some paper. And they're also dealing with being in close confines together in a small closet room downstairs below the Dunder Mifflin office. Meanwhile, in the office, Jim has an assignment from Idris Elba that he doesn't know how to complete, which is to complete a rundown. And what I love about this storyline, I definitely want to talk about it, is how many times have people gotten an assignment from a manager who's new or someone they don't know, and they're too embarrassed to ask actually how to do it. So they waste the whole day trying to figure it out. But anyway, that's the synopsis. John,
great synopsis.
Yeah, take us away with the first question for Professor Shadi and the office.
By the way, can I just jump in? I have to, it's the most annoying, grating thing for me about this episode is John Krasinski's or Jim Halpert's hesitance to just ask the manager
what a rundown
what
is,
what he wants out of this rundown. Mm-hmm. So I can give you a little bit. I mean, aside from the common sense logic that would suggest if your manager asks you for something and you don't know what it is, it's perfectly fine to try to clarify what the expectations for the assignment are or for the requests are. And as it turns out, all of the academic research suggests that asking questions casts the question asker in like really good light. So people tend to think people who ask a lot of questions are more intelligent or more motivated. You empathize more with them. So, and there's just really no reason for him not to try to clarify, especially given all of the other stumbles he's had with Charles Minor up until this point. So that's really frustrating. If nothing else, what you should take away from this episode when you go out to your internships this summer and graduate into the real world next year is do not be afraid to ask questions. It will help your actual job performance and make you look better from a psychological standpoint or intersocial standpoint.
I completely agree. That was my biggest takeaway from the episode. And especially you can just watch how much worse it gets every time he pretends he knows what he's doing. Mm. It's just a harder hole to climb out of to actually admit, yeah, I lied to you before, or yeah, when I said I knew what I was doing, I wasn't, and it's 100 times worse. So being confident to do that is so important. I do think that, you know, Idris Elba, hopefully a future James Bond, I would be nervous to ask him a question too and seem like I didn't know. So I definitely get where Jim's coming from, but ultimately you gotta work up that courage. And do you have any advice for students when they feel really intimidated by who they need to get this information from?
I mean, I don't know whether The Office came out before The Wire, but if Jim is like worried that he's dealing with Stringer Bell instead of Charles Minor, maybe that's part of the issue here. Because that guy is very intimidating.
He is.
And I would be a little bit nervous to ask.
Big guy. That's a big dude right there.
Criminal mastermind. What he's requesting. I mean, one thing you can do, and Jim does, is particularly if other people have been there longer than you, then at one point he goes and asks Oscar, right? Mm-hmm. What, like, do you have any idea what a rundown is?
I would also go to the accountants. They are usually very informed.
On top of things, right? They're always dotting I's and crossing T's. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, I think one strategy you could employ is just take like a bite-sized chunk out of whatever it is you're trying to do that gives you the plausible deniability of not knowing what it is. So like draft up what you think might be a rundown and show your boss 10% of it, or just an example of the kind of thing that he or she is looking for. And what managers really like is having something to respond to. Mm. So rather than, you know, it's in a lot of situations, you have people that you're working for, people that are above you. And a lot of times they themselves don't even know what they're asking for in a lot of situations. They like don't know what they need until they see it. And so if you can give somebody something to respond to, that's always a good idea. It shows that you've taken some initiative, you put some thought and effort into it. It may be wrong, but they're there to help guide you. And so that can maybe blunt some of the intimidation, perhaps, if you're worried about that.
I really like that advice. It also makes me feel bad for Jim, because every time he did try to bring it up with Charles, he just threw the question back at him like, oh, do I actually need to look at this? Oh, are you actually spending a lot of time on this? Or, you know, asking these questions that put Jim on the spot. So I find that very interesting, and hopefully no one has to deal with that. But, you know, praying that none of us have to go through a situation like that in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when you have to manage up and say, yes, please. You can't just assume that I know what I'm doing. And by asking questions, I'm trying to be more productive for the company. Framing it for the benefit of the organization, not that you as an employee are underperforming.
I mean, he even could have just been like, this is in the interest of saving you time down the road. Like, I don't want to... I don't want to waste your time with a fully rundown that is not what you're expecting. Why don't you give me a little bit more guidance here so I can be more efficient for you?
Mm. Well, and the best part is at the end, he tells him to fax the distribution list. So he faxes his dad because he doesn't know who else to fax it to. And that's definitely not right. So let's definitely not just fax your parents.
I don't know. I think Mr. Halper would really appreciate that rundown of their clients.
Probably proprietary.
Speaking of more like strategy and what could have been done better, moving towards that, we definitely want to hear some of your marketing expertise and your marketing insights. So going back to the Michael Scott Paper Company, Michael Scott, his plan of approach to marketing this new company that he just created was super cheap, free delivery, and paper-shaped pancakes. If you were to evaluate Michael Scott's approach to his marketing strategy, what would you say, and how would you kind of construct it maybe a little bit better? Would love to hear your insight on that.
Wow. So there's a lot to unpack here. We just talked about in class this week, we talked about promotion and how that's going to align with your strategy. That presupposes that you have a strategy to begin with. And so what we talk about from day one in marketing is that you can't do anything until you understand your customer. You can't do anything until you understand your own strengths and weaknesses as a company, your competition. Then you can formulate a strategy. And only then can you start thinking about promotional tactics that reflect the strategy you've settled on. And of course, that strategy in turn reflects your understanding of the competitive landscape. Now, the issue with the Michael Scott Paper Company is it seems like Michael Scott started at the other end of that, the order of operations has been reversed. It seems like he got a little bit too enamored with this cute idea of, I want to make paper-shaped pancakes. And so let me see how I can shoehorn that into a marketing strategy or an advertising strategy for promotional strategy for my new company. And then kind of backfilled from there. I think what Michael Scott really missed is another thing that we talk about in class is how if you're selling a commodity, which ultimately it's very clear paper, like stock plain white paper is, then you've got to think, and unless you're willing to compete solely on price, which actually they end up doing down the road, you have to think really critically about how you can stand out from your competition. And Michael Scott, for all his I don't know how to put this delicately, like for all his ridiculousness and ineptitude as a manager, he actually is a pretty good salesperson and good at like maintaining relationships. And, in a lot of respects, he is a good manager, and he's got this huge Rolodex and relationships and experience, right? Everything that we saw out of the Chili's restaurant episode, he's grown up in this place. He knows how to talk to people who've grown up in the same place. That I think is the way he should be thinking about differentiating himself from Dunder Mifflin, this like big paper company. I mean, it's of course smaller than the Staples of the world, but it's still headquartered in New York. I mean, his strategic advantage here that he chose not to emphasize or play up through his strategy and promotional tactics, I think is really just that he knows this community and he knows the businesses in this community and knows the people that runs these businesses. Mm-hmm. And if he had appealed to that in some way, I think that would have been a little bit more effective. I think they would have gotten more than just one sale out of their first big initiative.
Right.
The pancake promotion has nothing to do with what he is what differentiates his company from Dunder Mifflin. And I think that if he would have done something that instead could have carved out a specific, differentiated the Michael Scott Paper Company in the mind of his consumer, that would have been much more effective.
Yeah, so many great points that you just shared. I think you're talking about the episode where he ends up selling, he's at dinner with Jan and someone else at Chili's and they connect over the Baby Back Rib song.
I want my baby back.
Yeah, exactly. And every time we saw Michael actually doing a sales call throughout the show's history, you're always impressed. He totally comes off as a buffoon, but as soon as he's actually one-on-one with someone, he remembers everything about them. He is creating a true personal connection and he makes the best sales. And that's why he has lasted at this company, even though he has done a million HR violations.
His advantage over what he has to offer relative to what Dunder Mifflin has to offer has nothing to do with pancakes and fake coupons for great customer service. He can live that. He can show that. He could have just gone on a roadshow with his employees and said, listen, you're one of my biggest clients from Dunder Mifflin. Here's the reason why I left. Those are reasons that I think would make, you're empathizing and appreciating those reasons and the relationship you've had with me over time. Like, I'm there to look after you. A lot of your loyalty has been to the kind of personalized and personal service you get from me. And he doesn't emphasize that at all with this pancake breakfast.
Michael, it's to me, he's the type of leader that is really great one-on-one, like closing the deal, but you do not want him like planning the business because he gets distracted really easily. And so my background is in marketing, and there were things that I would call ego marketing, which is like the CEO really wants to do it because it makes them feel like their company is very successful. I think paper-shaped pancakes could fall into that category. You're like, oh, but look, we have paper-shaped pancakes, or oh, look, we have this billboard. But you know, are there really going to be extra sales from this billboard, or are you just happy to see it when you're driving to work? And so balancing those two things, I think Michael's probably really great, like on the ground, being the salesman, maybe motivating teams of salespeople, like a regional manager, but not necessarily like the strategic vision who can execute and
like, sort of, think about the golden ticket promotion. Like that was way less about, or that was way more just about Michael Scott wanting to dress up as Willy Wonka, right?
Yeah.
And it like goes down in flames before we realize that actually it was a really great idea. But it's another one of these examples where it like serves to massage his ego more than anything.
Yes.
Well, kind of pressing on that a little bit. So he named this new company the Michael Scott Paper Company. And it seems like based on what you guys just talked about of like, you know, a lot of the actual customers resonated with Michael Scott himself just because of, you know, the personal relationship and that loyalty that he built. Do you think that naming it Michael Scott Paper Company was actually a good play in this sense? Or do you think it also just kind of fed into like that vanity and whatnot?
You know, I hadn't thought about that before you just asked it. And my gut, my inclination here is that it was actually a pretty good idea. That if he had gone with some random you know what, like we see companies now, like if he had gone with like a paper startup today would be spelled like PAPR, right?
Exactly. Paper. Yeah.
And no one would that's really so know true. What the deal is, but people know who Michael Scott is, and that's again, when you're selling a commodity, you've got to figure out ways to differentiate yourself. And his competitive advantage is that he's known all these clients for decades. He's gone up through the ranks from a salesperson at Dunder Mifflin under Ed Truck to now being the manager. And the loyalty
rest
is to
in
him
peace,
and
Ed Truck.
Into yeah. his name. And I think it was actually a pretty good idea to emphasize that.
Yeah, I think that I can't imagine it being named anything else. Also, don't know where the name Dunder Mifflin came from for Dunder Mifflin Paper Company. It doesn't spark joy within me when I think about that name either. But at least with Michael Scott Paper Company, you know what you're getting.
Wasn't it like two dudes, like a guy named Dunder and Mifflin?
Dunder and Mifflin, that's right.
Dartmouth. Or a Brown, one of those. And they have the same first name, I believe.
Yeah, they do the skit about them.
Yeah. Oh, company Holly. Picnic, if you need to.
Yes, Company Picnic. Yeah, so I guess he was just following their lead and naming it after themselves.
Oh, I think it was Robert Dunder and Robert Mifflin.
Ooh,
that sounds right.
Yeah, that feel like that rang a bell just now.
So when you think about Michael Scott Paper Company versus the Staples versus the mid-sized Dunder Mifflins, if you were trying to launch, it doesn't have to be paper. You can pick an industry that you know more about. Do you think they have a chance? Like there's another episode that we were talking about, business school, where Michael is a guest speaker at Ryan's business school, and the class just destroys Michael asking questions about how they're never going to succeed up against the big box retailers. Why are they even trying? They're definitely just gonna die one day. But yet there still are a lot of small businesses popping up. So thoughts on how they can set themselves apart with their STP 4Ps or anything else, tips for the small business paper
salesman. Hearing the marketing framework. So a couple of things. The first is that if we're talking about a product like paper, you need to the extent that you can, just take price off the table as a consideration. So either recognize that you're never going to get the kinds of clients that are simply just bargain shoppers, you know, the price conscious segment that like has no loyalty, has no, doesn't really have any complicated needs or requires customized solutions. Like if for a buyer that is literally only interested in price, you either have to say, I'm not going to target that segment, or you have to take it off the table as a differentiating factor. Say, and he does, he says, we're going to match or undercut the Dunder Mifflin prices. Now, as the episode shows, this may or may not be super sustainable. So it depends on what your long-term strategy is. But I would recommend, or if I were trying to start a paper company, having just left Dunder Mifflin, the first thing I would do if I want to keep those clients is I say, listen, I'm going to match all of the prices from Dunder Mifflin. And now what we're going to emphasize are the non-monetary, non-price related features that make us stand apart. And this is where you can talk about the free delivery, the relationships, the fact that you can call up the owner anytime, the fact that Michael Scott knows a lot about the industry and a lot about paper needs, whereas Charles Miner, the new manager, is, I think he came from Steel, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't have the same level of understanding. And so if you can play that up, then and offer solutions that you don't think that a bigger company, like a less flexible, less nimble company like Dunder Mifflin could offer, then I think that's ultimately how you stand out in the marketplace for an extremely commoditized good here, to the extent that you can like turn that into more of a service. I think it'll be more advantageous in the long run.
Yeah, what you just said really reminded me of our most recent assignment that we all turned in this week. We had to essentially price a commodity that no one was familiar with at all, curled metal cushion pads for pipe driving. Everyone listening,
Google it,
pile driving, if you want to know what it is. And those things that you were just listing, so his knowledge of the industry, the customer service, the ability to call them at any time of day, those we could all assign a price to essentially, and then add that onto the competitor's price to find out what we might want to charge if they were going to consider a price.
One thing that we've been talking about in class all year, and hopefully I've not so boringly drilled into your heads that you're sick of me saying it, but when you really have to take a step back and figure out what benefit you're offering rather than what product you are selling. And so that suggests maybe, you know, what does the office manager at a law firm care about when they are thinking about ordering paper? They just don't want to run out of paper. You know, they're not necessarily super, they don't really care that much about like the color or whatever it is that differentiates paper. Like price is certainly part of it, but what is the need that you're offering? You could potentially say, like, if we're Michael Scott Paper Company, like the need that you're satisfying is just not running out of paper. And so you could provide some kind of subscription service where you just like track your inventory of paper, and like we will automatically provide when we notice that it gets under a certain amount, we automatically provide a delivery to top you up or something. I mean, it's not like, think about the benefit is that you just never want to have to worry about running out of paper. It's not like people are going to stockpile paper. It's like not costless to store. They just never want to have to think about it. And so you can imagine a strategy where Michael Scott says, like, we're just going to take care of your paper needs. We don't have to talk about reams or boxes or like, we're just going to make sure that your stock room is always supplied. You can think creatively then about how to offer a solution and not just what product are you selling.
Yeah. Really like that. It's all about providing that value, fulfilling that need, and just delivering on it every single time. So really love that. That's super cool. Super cool.
Yeah. Do you think that the commercial, this is a different episode, but they make a commercial and
limitless paper in a paperless world.
But they sing the song Dunder Mifflin, the people, persons, paper people. You've got Michael and Stanley with your people, paper needs. That to me kind of summarizes what you just said. So do you think that
little ditty is the right type of promotion to tie into the Michael Scott Paper Company or Dunder Mifflin? Or what would you do if you were in their shoes instead of the pancake event?
So we actually have talked a little bit about jingles in class. Right. It's, I mean, the idea
I'm a jingle fan personally.
You want to be, you want to, when you think about paper people, you want to be the brand that's associated with that. I'm not sure that that's the challenge that Michael faces right now with his paper startup company. I think any kind of promotional strategy, I think, should be more about emphasizing that, that personal relationship he has with clients. And so I would encourage him to, you know, one of the things we talked about this week in promotion is that you can do sort of a one size fits all, just, you know, run a Super Bowl ad, broadcast widely with a general message, or you can do more of a personal sales kind of relationship or effort where, you know, you're really trying to think about the specific needs of a particular client. And then, so I mentioned at the outset, like what I would have done something like a roadshow with my team and said, and explained, this is what we're doing. This is why we left. This is why we think we offer you more value than Dunder Mifflin, and sort of show that relationship or that potential for retaining that relationship, which it seems like, you know, the customers that the clients that Dunder Mifflin already has that haven't left for Staples or Office Depot yet, you can assume that they do value that to some degree. And so playing that up in your promotional strategy, I think, is the way to go, or at least what I would recommend. Mm.
Always about the people. I like it.
I don't think Pam would have enjoyed Roadshow, though, with Michael and Ryan. So
she's been on way too many of those.
A lot of good comedy, though. Mm.
I would have watched that episode for sure.
All right. Well, I want to move on to some superlatives for the office. So just thinking through, this is something we did when we talked about Harry Potter before, and we talked about, you know, who would you like to have lead your team, all of those types of things. So coming from the MBA business perspective, who out of the characters do you think would be the best manager and why?
Wow. So, I mean, I think maybe the point of the show is kind of that Michael, for all his flaws, is actually a pretty good manager. Yeah. So I'm thinking about the, you know, when he has that confrontation with Stanley, like he understands that he's never going to get Stanley's respect, but he knows when to take, he says, like, I'm your boss and I demand a certain level of respect, and you can think whatever you want about me personally, and leave that at the door. Or just think about all the ways he resolves conflicts in ways that, you know,
the win-win strategy.
Yeah, or win-win-win, right, option number five or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But in a lot of ways, I think the genius of Michael Scott as a manager is that his incompetence deflects a lot of the real underlying problems. And so he, for example, in the win-win-win strategy was able to diffuse a conflict between Angela and Oscar by
compromising,
in some ways, making the conflict now all about how much they hate him. Mm. How he's offering a terrible solution and obsessed with I'm not sure that I off the top of my head can think of someone who has actually, or somebody in the office that could do a better job than Michael, but and so in the absence of that, I think he does okay. I mean, Karen ends up running her own branch, but we don't know too much about
Karen. Is underappreciated. You know, she got a lot of hate, obviously, for trying to steal Jim, but I think looking back on it, yeah, I agree. Karen's great.
I think we can all agree the answer is not Dwight.
Yeah, yeah.
I would work on Dwight's beet farm, but I would not work at Dwight's paper company.
Sure. Kind of like going off the superlatives, I'm curious to hear who, if anyone, comes to mind if you would like promote someone to like the marketing head or the director of marketing for Dunder Mifflin. Because that's like a pretty different question in a sense, right? Like
they have no marketing. It must happen at the corporate level.
Yeah.
They just have, or they have a sales team instead of a marketing
right,
team.
Right, right.
In a lot of ways, Andy is very clever and very engaging. And you can almost imagine him coming up with like a really fun, like he could write a jingle and play guitar.
Right.
So musical.
Kind of like a goofy commercial and his kind of ignorance and naivete, like all that is kind of endearing, you know? And I think that gives him a level of relatability that maybe would help him as a marketer.
Really love that.
Yeah, answer. You know, I hadn't thought about the fact that they don't have a dedicated marketing team.
Yeah, it just seems like people come up with ideas and then they're like, yeah, let's go for it. Let's try it out.
Usually what about you, John? Who would your marketer be out of the bunch?
Marketer. I feel like if you gave him a chance, like although I hate his character so much, Ryan, I think Ryan could show some potential only because of the fact that he is always thinking outside of the box, right? And I appreciate that. Although he's like a pretty terrible face for the company and like has done a lot of bad things and just not a great character, I think if they molded him in a way, gave him some guidance and like also gave him the freedom to express his creativity as well as like his wanting to just like make different things and like make them succeed. I feel like that drive, if molded and crafted in a way and focused, could do really well. And obviously he's good at marketing himself in a bad way, so maybe we could flip that and market into a good way. I don't know if that's a really...
Yeah. No, I think Kelly has a lot of potential to be a great marketer. She's super empathetic and she like has been customer focused facing this whole time at Dunder Mifflin.
That's a great point.
Because she is the crisis hotline, taking all of their complaints. So I think that she's super tapped into the customer and also typed into like social media. And I don't know where their clients are, but if their clients are on social media, I think she could do a good job with some fun campaigns. So maybe we put her and Ryan together on the marketing team.
I changed my answer. That's a great point that marketing is all about understanding the customer and Kelly, as somebody who deals with customer complaints, she's got a firsthand or first row seat to understanding the customer. And you could argue understands the customer better than anyone else in the office. That's a really good thought.
All right. Last question. This one comes from our producer, Jody.
Go Jody.
If you remember the Yankee Swap episode, which of the Yankee Swapped gifts would you have picked?
So I'm not allowed to say the iPod, right? Because that was like
you are. That is one of the Yankee Swap gifts.
It's called the PearPod, guys. Come on, right? Isn't it?
Is it? I think you're right. It was a pear.
I thought they called it the PearPod.
Yeah, because it's they didn't get the iPod actual branding.
Okay. All right.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
I think they call it an iPod, but there's a pear on it because they didn't get approval for the logo. But you can say the word iPod. So I think that's what they did.
Product placement in the show.
I mean, it was early. It was like season 2. So they weren't that successful yet. Now, like, they totally would do it for free.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let me spitball a couple ideas here. My favorite character is Creed. And so if I could get Creed's like leftover, doesn't he give his leftover clothes or like a bag of clothes?
Yeah, it's a shirt, pretty sure.
That would be a pretty cool keepsake to have from Creed.
Awesome.
You know, right now, given that I'm teaching 9 hours every Tuesday, and I do that at my standing desk. So I stand for 9 hours every Tuesday. I wouldn't mind Kevin's foot wash massage device.
That's what I had my eye on too. I was eyeing the foot massager.
A good one.
And then so it would be one of those two, I think.
Nice.
Yeah. Hours of standing. Do you have one of those cushions that help your feet?
No, I don't.
Hammocks.
It's not a foot hammock, but it's like this squishy pad that makes standing better for your feet. If you ever feel like it's just hurting by the end of the day, you could invest in one of those.
I don't know. I'm just so rejuvenated and invigorated by all of your energy every Tuesday.
Yay!
It's not until class is over that I'm thinking about my feet.
Okay, good. We love to hear it.
Cool. All right. Well, Professor Franklin Shaddy, thank you so much for your time here. It's been super fun. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have, because I'm sure we... Oh, yes, that's huge. So this is like your moment. I feel like we should give you the space to do a shameless plug. Like, I know you have a lot of research going on. You have publications. You might want to throw some advice to up-and-coming marketers. This is your chance to, you know, 20 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever you're feeling, say something to the people. What do you want them to know?
Oh, wow. putting me on the spot here. I mean, on the very first day of class, and I'll reiterate this in the last day of class, I try to acknowledge that I recognize not everybody wants to go into marketing, not everyone will go into marketing, but I really do believe that the principles and the insights and the frameworks and just the way of thinking about the world that we try to cultivate in this class and the way that we teach marketing at Anderson, I think is useful for so much more than just you know, selling a paper at a paper company, right? I mean, we all to some degree you all are here in some degree to market yourselves to future employers. Basically anytime you are trying to convince somebody of something, whether you're a politician or trying to raise money for a charitable cause, right? This is all marketing. It all comes back to thinking about your customer, understanding your strengths and weaknesses, understanding how you're different than the competition, whether that's another politician or another charitable cause, right? And then from there, understanding how to optimize a strat or create a strategy that makes sense given what you know about yourself and your competition, however it's defined. And then making sure that whatever you do in the service of achieving that strategy is aligned to it. And so I guess if I have a soapbox, or if I have 20 seconds, I guess now more than 20 seconds. If I have 20 seconds to leave you with a soapbox takeaway, it's that think that you cannot go wrong thinking about all the ways in which marketing and the framework that we think about in class can apply to so much more than just business.
Amazing.
Snaps for that.
Amazing.
I love that. I think that's such a good takeaway for everybody listening. And on behalf of the A-Suite podcast, thank you so much, yeah. Professor Shaddy. We really enjoyed it. You're always welcome to come back and talk more of The Office with us or any of your other favorite shows.
Love to. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
And there you have it. Now that you know all about how to differentiate and promote a product, I hope you go out there and start your very own paper company. Now, big shout out to our guest, Professor Franklin Shaddy, for coming on and sharing his expertise around not only marketing, but also The Office. If you enjoyed this episode or if something resonated with you, tell us about it. Send us an email at theasuitepodcast@gmail.com, or better yet, leave us a review on your favorite podcast app and tell your friends all about The A-Suite. Big shout out to our amazing hosts, John and Katie, our executive audio director, Alyssa, and our executive producer, Jody. Thank you all so much for listening today, and we'll see you next time on The A-Suite Podcast. Signing off.